Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The long-running battle over the Medicaid expansion persisted last week as the Ohio General Assembly voted to override 11 of the governor's 47 line-item vetoes in the state budget. Though many of those overrides concern the Medicaid program, the proposed freeze on enrollment will not go forward, at least for now. We're talking about that and many other items that did make it into the state budget this hour on our weekly Reporters Roundtable. Joining us, State House reporter for Cleveland.com, Jackie Borchardt. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Also reporter for Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Joe Ingles. Welcome back.
Great to be here.
And by phone, Columbus Dispatch State House reporter Jim Siegel. Welcome, Jim.
Good morning.
Let's talk about that expansion. It's safe for now, right, Jim Siegel?
Yes, it is. In terms of the freeze, the House, there was a lot of talk that the House would try to override what was essentially been a freeze on enrollment starting in July of 2018. The expectation was that once, you know, basically what that means is that if you were not on the expansion at that date, you couldn't get on. And if you were on at that date, but then later got a job that with a higher income and you went off, you would not be able to come back on later if for some reason you lost that job, unless you had a mental health or drug treatment issue that you were dealing with. There was a, because of that, and because of the way the Medicaid, especially the expansion, tends to work, people do tend to churn on and off of the program. So there was an estimate put out by the governor's office that they estimated that 500,000 Ohioans would lose their health coverage by within the first 18 months of this freeze going into effect. There's a little over 700,000 people on the expansion now. So and frankly, that number, even if it's a little high, there's still, like I said, because of the way the expansion works, over time the expansion simply would have disappeared. It may not have been, you know, it may take 5 years, but the expansion population almost entirely would have probably vanished within 5 years, no matter what the circumstance.
Joe Ingles, what does it mean that they didn't go after this very particular and very big part of the budget?
Well, you know, it looked like they might initially.
Yeah.
And even afterwards, after they did veto 11, was it 11 things they vetoed?
Right.
And
they overrode
the veto.
11 of the 47, yeah.
Right, there we go. But they, you know, they didn't go after this big freeze. And after the after they had the session, Speaker Rosenberger said, hey, we have the votes. We can do this at any time. We can do this. We can pick it up later. And the question was, well, why don't you do it now?
And did he respond to that?
He said that he thought that the federal government was doing some changes to the program, and he kind of wanted to wait and see what the federal government did. So they were kind of taking a wait-and-see attitude. But he kept saying, you know, we can come back on this. We can do this later. But then after the fact, some of the people around the State House who were kind of in and knew what was going on, they questioned whether there really were enough votes to override the veto on the freeze itself.
You know, Jackie Borchardt, it kind of keeps people on tenterhooks. I mean, we're talking about 500,000 people who are depending on this, but they don't know if it'll be there. What's the timeline for this? When does the Ohio General Assembly or the House have to decide whether or not to vote on the vetoes?
So legally, constitutionally, they have until the end of the session, which is December 2018. But, you know, the deadline or the date that this would go into effect would be after July 1st of 2018. So it doesn't seem to make sense to, you know, try and do it after that. I think, you know, the Medicaid freeze became the big flashpoint in the budget this year. And even after, you know, Governor Kasich vetoed that provision, we saw a lot of activity around it, lobbying on both sides, phone calls to lawmakers. There was a rally at the State House. People were really kind of, you know, energized around that topic. So, you know, it may have been politically easier for the House to, you know, pass on the freeze. Meanwhile, they did veto override nine other Medicaid related vetoes. So while, you know, everyone was saying, oh, this is a big win for Governor Kasich, I mean, they still chipped away at the other things that Kasich didn't want, you know, in the budget.
And brought him back.
Well, they brought him back. I mean, the Senate still has to approve it.
Right.
I think that's the big
that's
thing that
big
needs is really important. These things are still
in play.
In play. They're not. It's not a done deal. The Senate still has to come back and approve it. And that's, you know, unknown at this point. If they will, and if they do, you know, what will they come back? You know, the Senate was the one that put in the Medicaid freeze. So, you know, you'd think that they would want to do that one. But the House has to do it first.
Right. Yeah. Jim Siegel, what else of import regarding Medicaid did the Ohio House vote to override in, among the vetoes?
Yeah, well, first we can set up where this is all stemming from. I mean, there have been a number of Republicans who have been unhappy with the way Medicaid expansion was put in place in 2014. They did not go, the administration did not go through a full House and Senate vote to get this approved. They went through the controlling board. Now, he got help from the legislative leaders at the time in order to make sure that board had enough votes to get what he wanted passed.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not pretend like the legislature didn't have any role in it, because they certainly did. But there is a number of members who really haven't liked this all along. But what they're finding, of course, is that it's very difficult to get rid of it. This same problem they're finding in Congress as well is that once you start giving folks insurance, it's very hard to take it away from them and not see consequences or backlash. So that's part of what we're seeing here. And I just want to mention real quick, like Joe kind of said, I have talked to other Republican legislators who say that the House did not have the votes to do the override. I'm not telling you that's correct or that mm-hmm. Speaker Rosenberg is correct. I'm just telling you that's what people are saying. But a lot of what they did override, that has to do with control. They want to make sure that the administration cannot raise Medicaid rates without approval. They want to make sure that the administration has to come back to the controlling board and ask permission to spend state money on the expansion population. Not all of it, maybe, but a good chunk, over $200 million worth. They made sure that the controlling board cannot do a Medicaid expansion type program again in the future by limiting how much the controlling board would be able to approve. There's a couple other things that are relating to nursing homes that were approved. The nursing homes are going to get $237 million back because of a veto override. If this, of course, all is mm-hmm. Senate approves it.
Right.
So, you know, there's another one dealing with neonatal care and newborn services that they wanted to set it at a certain rate. The governor vetoed it, but they've overridden. So a lot of it is about control, making sure the legislature has more control over this program. Again, a lot of this stemming back to 2014 and the fact that there's just still a lot of unhappiness about the way this was all implemented to begin with.
But Joe Ingles, the governor, was saying that a lot of what he vetoed regarding Medicaid was because the state legislature, the Ohio General Assembly, doesn't have the authority to operate a Medicaid program and make these kind of decisions on a federally funded program.
Yeah. I mean, basically, when the governor said that, he was trying to set the legal aspects of it in play in people's minds. He wanted the legislature to realize that this is a federal program and that, you know, the state, of course, administers it in Ohio. But a lot of these are federal dollars. And there are some legal questions in at least John Kasich's mind. And he's trying to plant those in lawmakers' minds as well as to how much freedom they actually have with this. But I think one big thing to remember here is the Senate usually is the most measured of the two between the House and the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really running out right now to try to override these vetoes. They're really taking more of a wait and see kind of approach.
What kind of schedule do they have?
Well, they had I'm not sure if it's still in the schedule this morning. I haven't checked. But they had an as needed session for this Thursday.
They canceled that already.
Yeah, right. Did they cancel that? Okay. Apparently it wasn't needed. And then they're going out, you know, they'll have their summer break and they don't come back until September, 5th, 6th?
So a lot of this just still hangs in the air then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And?
Yeah.
And I can just say, I've been told that one of the problems is when you start trying to do the, you know, sessions after into July mm-hmm. and August, is a lot of members are on vacations and because they weren't supposed to be here. And so it's not just about getting votes. It's about actually getting members physically in the chamber. I'm told that they are still trying to work it out. They could, you know, saying that they maybe could do it as early as next week, but it is a struggle just to get enough people in to actually take the votes.
All right, you know.
Well, and to talk about it, too.
I wasn't surprised that there's still things hanging in the air. Why are they? I mean, I don't know. But, yeah, Jackie Burchard.
Well, I mean, like Jim said, you know, in a budget year, and I know reporters do this, too. They plan their vacations for July and August because, you know, up until, you know, July 1st, you're assuming that anything could happen with the budget, and it could be up until midnight or even later. And that's where we were this year. You know, the governor signed the bill about, what, 20 to midnight, quarter to midnight. And, you know, legislative leaders weren't even there. They had gone home already. So, I mean, so they haven't even been in the same room. I'm talking about the Senate now to talk about this. And even last week when there was still some uncertainty of whether, you know, what they were going to vote on, if anything, from the budget bill. And it was just the night before that they were able to have that discussion and decide what they were going to go forward with.
You know, Jim Siegel, what does all of this say? I mean, we know that John Kasich's a lame duck governor. There's no surprise there. But what does it say about his power going forward, as he's pointed out, for the next 18 months or 17 months now? I don't know what it is.
Well, the legislature and the governor have definitely some disagreements on some things, especially related to Medicaid. And, you know, the governor is a lame duck. He has been spending an awful lot of time outside the state. He's been spending a lot of time fighting against the what's going on in Congress, where, you know, where he seems to be getting even more pushback inside his own state house. But, I mean, look, there's a number of these number of lawmakers who are not enamored with Governor Kasich anymore, and you know, in his tactics and his style. And this is, I mean, look, we have not had a budget override be successful, I believe, in 40 years. And so, you know, to suddenly do 11 is pretty unprecedented, especially when you're talking about a Republican House and a Republican governor. I mean, you know, Republican leadership is saying this is not about our personal feelings. But it's just really kind of impossible to not see it as something more than just policy decisions. There's definitely some rifts there.
What does all this mean going forward? This is a typical campaign, you know, going back and saying, here's what we passed in the budget. They can't say anything about that right now, can they, Joe Ingles?
Well, they can. But, I mean, let's face it, most people are not familiar with the ins and outs of the budget, especially when you come to campaign time and you start getting these talking points and whatnot. That's what the big deal is, I think, is this whole idea of, and it's nationally and in the state, there's a question of what do you do with health care now? Because they, you know, when you called it Obamacare and, you know, you had a certain number of people out there every day banging the drum about how bad it was. So you were getting people buying into that. They thought a lot of people thought Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act were two different things. And now you've got this problem that Republicans have gotten in. They've you know, a lot of them have talked about getting rid of Obamacare, and that's really latched on with some voters. Now they're in there. And the voters are realizing, well, wait a minute, we kind of like this and we kind of like that. And I think it's really hard for lawmakers to determine, do we really want to get rid of this? Is this more politically expedient to change it? And I think, you know, when you talk about President Trump last week said, now, if we can't pass something, then I think we just ought to get rid of it and come back later. Well, you know, that opens up a huge can of worms because, you know, you would have all kinds of problems if you did that, if you just cut it off. So, you know, legally that could create some challenges. So I think they've kind of got at the state and the national level, politically and just functionally, they're having a hard time figuring out where this situation stands and where they should go with it. Because do you want to be the politicians that tried to take away health care from people who, you know, voted for you?
We'll continue our conversation with our weekly reporters roundtable. You just heard from Joe Ingles. She's a reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Also with us by phone, Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch State House team, and Jackie Borchardt, Statehouse reporter for Cleveland.com. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8255. 8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. Last week, the Ohio House voted to override 11 of Governor Kasich's budget vetoes, 11 out of 47. It's unprecedented action, even for one override. It hasn't happened in 40 years for a Republican-controlled House and a Republican-controlled governor. It's amazing. Still with us, State House reporter for Cleveland.com, Jackie Borchardt. Also reporter for Ohio Public Radio, State House News Bureau, Joe Engels. And by phone, Columbus Dispatch State House reporter, Jim Siegel. According to the governor's office, the Medicaid budget is a $1.4 billion short. Is that right? Joe Engels or Jackie Borchardt, Jim Siegel?
I don't know the exact number.
Jim, are you
that's
there?
That's what they're projecting, and that's state and federal dollars combined.
Okay.
And there's a couple reasons for that, and some of them were part of Kasich's vetoes, or Kasich tried to address them through his vetoes. But like Joe mentioned, or maybe you mentioned earlier, that nursing homes are going to get $237 million. Well, that was originally a cut in the Kasich budget that was introduced a couple months ago. And then they also they changed the rate, how they calculate what those payments are. Well, what the Kasich folks are saying is that in the budget that was passed by both chambers a couple weeks ago, they put the $237 million back in for the nursing homes, but they eliminated the rate change that actually – or I'm sorry, they assumed that they were still saving $237 million, but they took out the rate change that made that savings possible. So, you know, when you're looking at balancing a budget and you're looking at how the numbers come out, that right there was, out of balance. And then there was another issue with the hospital rates. It was a similar situation where the Kasich budget had changed the rate of reimbursement from the Medicaid program. And the lawmakers had still assumed that savings was there, but eliminated the way that they created the savings. So that, you know, took out another chunk of money that they said is unbalanced. So what the Kasich administration was warning about as these veto overrides were coming in is, hey, we were already dealing with a shortfall. And, you know, some of these overrides, especially the nursing home one and a couple others, have put us in a worse position where in a couple of weeks we're going to have to sit down at the table and figure out how we're going to make that savings, you know, brought in a broader sense, who's going to get those cuts, whether it's home health care or hospitals or primary care physicians.
Or all of the above.
Yeah. I mean, they said it amounts to about a 6% across the board cut, but they don't want to necessarily do that if they don't have to, if someone can say, hey, we can save more here or there.
Besides Medicaid, there were some other line item vetoes that the House voted to override. One of them was fracking in state parks. The governor vetoed a line item that would permit fracking in state parks under certain circumstances. The House voted to override that. Joe Engels, what's the significance of that? How could there be fracking in state parks now?
Well, there could be fracking in state parks if the Senate goes along
right.
with that override.
All of this is yeah.
And but you know there's been a fight over this for a long time. And, you know, basically there are questions as to, you know, Governor Kasich wants to prevent it. And the legislature has always seemed to go along with the idea. So I don't know. That's up in the air, really.
To be really precise, that's already allowed in Ohio, but it's the commission, this oil and gas commission that currently the governor has the ability to appoint people to that would make those decisions, and he's decided to just not appoint anybody. And so the result is there's no fracking in state parks. And so this is yet another one of these issues that we saw in the budget debate where the legislature is saying, we decided that at the outset, and we are reclaiming control over that provision, and we want to be able to, you know, appoint people so we can do that and get things going.
Okay. Another battle. Jim Siegel, you did your annual What Else in the Budget, From Schools to Ice Cream, How Ohio's New Budget Affects You is the headline. Look forward to it every year. And it starts out with the plight of bouncy houses. I mean, how do they even think about this stuff when it comes to a budget like this? What's happening with bouncy houses?
Well, you know, there's a lot of lobbyists representing a lot of special interests around the State House, and all of them know that the budget is a good place to put little items here and there that otherwise might take a full bill, and they don't want to run it through the process. But, you know, you've got things like now we're going to have a, you know, just changing so little things that really only impact certain very small segments, like, you know, new inspection fees for inflatable rides and appointing people to the Advisory Council on Amusement Ride Safety and allowing for, you know, alcoholic ice cream to be created and sold. And but there are some bigger things too, such as, for example, it's called the CAUV. This is the formula that is used to determine farmland values for tax purposes. And what they approved was a new formula that will lower property values for farmland. It'll save farmers probably fairly significant property taxes by doing that. However, if you're a homeowner, particularly a homeowner in a district with a lot of agricultural land, you're going to see your property taxes go up because of this. And some have estimated statewide it's about $80 million. Of basically an unvoted property tax increase for homeowners, because somebody has to pay that millage, and if one side of the ledger goes down, the other side has to go up. So there are some, you know, it's not all bouncy houses and things. There are some things in here that obviously, you know, such as college tuition is going to be allowed to go up. You know, the governor vetoed that, but it's still, you know, so it's in place now where you can raise tuition up to 6% as long as you give students a four-year guarantee that's the rate it's going to be. Ohio State, I think, is just about to approve or just did approve 5.5% or something of that nature. So yeah, there's a whole lot of things that get slipped in here because it's an easy way to get it all through without having much debate and much process to have to go through.
Including the buying fireworks thing, that's been put off. The moratorium has been extended again until a year from September.
Yeah, that just basically means we're not going to have any new companies coming in selling fireworks in Ohio. It's Phantom Fireworks and a few others that are going to continue to dominate.
You know, one thing I was kind of interested in, well, a lot of stuff, but the budget eliminates fourth and sixth grade state achievement tests for social studies. What would you, any of you guys know what's behind that? Have they finally reached that tipping point? They're tired of testing and voting for testing, and now it's going to be this.
Well, the way it was explained to me is that they're not going to require the test at that level, but that they still have the curriculum hasn't really changed. So they're still expecting teachers to be teaching that. They just are not going to have the official statewide test on that. They want teachers to kind of teach it and do their own testing. But, you know, honestly, in this whole curriculum that we have, history, and, you know, that hasn't been something that's been given a lot of credence anyway. I mean, we're all about STEM these days. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of one of those areas that is first to go, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think they reached a tipping point a couple of years ago, because I think that we've seen them. This became an issue, I think, a couple of years ago. There are a lot of parents and educators who were making it known that they did not like the PARC test and all the amount of testing and pre-testing and preparing for the testing was taking away from actual learning in the classroom. And so we've seen that. I think that those concerns have been heard. And this is another thing that, you know, it's pretty small. It's one test for two grades. But it's something that they can take back to their district and say, hey, I voted to reduce testing in the schools.
You know, Jim Siegel, going back to the college funding issue, there's another piece in a bit in the budget that authorizes the state to investigate all fees. It would be the state chancellor, Board of Regents, to investigate all fees charged to students by universities and prohibit those fees determined not in the best interest of students. Sounds like some judgment calls going on there.
Yeah, this has been an ongoing issue about, the legislature steps up and freezes tuition, but then the universities turn around and jack up fees. And there's this, I don't know how prevalent it is, but there's definitely lawmakers concerned that it's been happening. And this is all kind of related to that. They're trying to, get their arms around all of the stuff that is charged to students and parents for higher education, and trying to make sure that no one slips in, big fee increases to make up for tuition reasons or things of that nature. And I think this is all part of that. I'll be curious to see how that works, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have no idea how that's going to be viewed and just how stringent they're going to be on those. So it'll be interesting to watch.
What's going on with the soybeans? It creates the Ohio Soybean Marketing Program. Who's against soybeans in Ohio? They're everywhere. What's going on? I mean, why are they doing that? I thought there was this push to get rid of those kinds of things.
I couldn't tell you.
I don't know why they get rid of them in the budget.
Yeah.
I believe at one point it was taken out. So whoever is the soybean champion at the State House scored a win on that one, I guess.
Yeah.
My guess is that's more of a line item that's just going to be, it's not going to be any real tax. There's no tax dollars or anything. It's just allowing them to do this. It's probably not going to be a huge deal, but.
Okay. Fixed teeth. Here's another one. Increases a variety of fees charged to dentists and dental hygienists for licenses, permits, and certificates. Does this mean our cost of dental care goes up?
Maybe if they pass that along.
Yeah.
I doubt it. Only in that this, we're not talking about huge fees here. I think we're probably talking about $100 or something or $200 a year, and I don't think it's enough that it's, creep into, dental costs, but it's. I'm sure the dentist will not be.
Where was their lobbyist?
Yeah, really.
Someone was sleeping on the job over there.
Maybe that soybean guy should have been.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right. The opioid crisis. What, Jim?
I was going to say, I don't know much about this, but it also could be that some of the dental lobby. It could be that they supported this because this is actually going to fund something specific that they want to pay for, but
okay.
I just don't know.
Okay. All right. True. We shouldn't assume anything when it comes to this stuff. Opioid crisis. It requires the development of a website and mobile app to provide information regarding opioid addiction treatment services. There's other stuff in the budget for funding for opioid addiction treatment.
Right. It's a huge line item. How much was it? 170 million?
65, 70, something like that. 165.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a huge line item for a new, attack against the opioid crisis. And there are many things in it, including the education piece, but there's also money in it for treatment. There's money in it for new initiatives to help local communities that are dealing with this. Lawmakers are saying, hey, this is a crisis. We have to deal with this. And that was one thing that both the House and the Senate was willing to fund. And the Senate actually added to it to get it up to that 170 million, about there. And I think the Senate added, I can't remember what they added, a little bit, but the House took a big chunk and put it there. And so it doesn't seem like there's a lot of controversy over that because everyone thinks they need to do more. Now, I think Governor Kasich even wants it to go further than that, though. He's been pretty outspoken that this is a huge problem, and that's one reason that he really likes the Medicaid expansion, because he thinks that without it, it will just take money away from this $170 million that they've earmarked, and they'll have to pay that out in a different way. If the expansion goes away.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Kasich's original budget pretty much flat funded the state's efforts on fighting the opioid crisis. And that was, I think, a high point where lawmakers grabbed out of that and said, we want to find more money for this. The Kasich administration says that state spends about $1 billion, a little bit under $1 billion a year. Most of that is through, they're counting as through Medicaid, and then a portion of that through the expansion. But that was not in the original budget. Mm-hmm. And the one I think you know, everyone kind of came around this idea that we need more more state help in this area. But the Senate and the final version also, you know, where did they get that money from? It's not new money. They're dealing with $1 billion, you know, deficit. So where did they get it from? Well, $35 million of that is coming from local government funds that would be going to cities. So that are already spending, you know, some of that money on police, fire, emergency technicians to deliver naloxone and to, you know, dealing with that on the extreme front lines.
You know, in this budget, they went to a lot of these little funds that are set aside for a lot of little things, little boards, little commissions that might have money. And they started consolidating all these commissions and boards and putting them at the state level most of the time, so the state would have control over them, and then putting that money into the GRF, or General Revenue Fund. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one way that they came up with a lot of dollars for this budget, the lawmakers. They did that. And so, you know, it's interesting when you look at all those little things, they do add up in the end.
We're talking about the state budget. It's kind of, it's still in play. The Ohio House has voted to override 11 of the 47 vetoes that the governor put through before signing it a couple weeks ago, 1 week and a half ago or so. Now it goes to the Senate. They don't know when they're coming back into session, so we don't know when all this will be resolved. My guest, Jackie Borchardt, for a State House reporter from the Cleveland.com. Also, Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau and Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is our weekly reporters roundtable, and we're kind of going through this and that from the still pending, in a way, two-year state budget, waiting Senate approval or not of the Ohio House votes to override 11 of the 47 line item vetoes that the governor put forth before signing the budget. With me, Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com, and Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch. Let's talk about how they're funding this thing. We were talking about it off the air, Jackie Borchardt. You know, they're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul a little bit. For example, the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, the budget, there's a line item in there. The budget director can take up to 2% of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation budget, the EPA, Insurance and Industrial Commissions to help balance the budget.
Right. It's called those are rotary funds, rotary
funds.
Raids, which it's not uncommon for the budget to do that. But that is something that Republicans opposed when former Governor Ted Strickland did it last in his budget. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, they were facing from the time that Governor Kasich introduced his budget at the end of January to, you know, mid-June when they were finishing up the state budget, there was about $1 billion difference over the next 2 years that they wouldn't have in revenue, according to the state projections. So, you know, they went about, instead of raising taxes or rolling back some of the previous tax breaks, recent tax breaks, they looked for places where they could cut. And they did that through a couple ways. One way is they made across the board agency cuts, anywhere from 3 to 5%. And that's everything. That's, you know, Department of Commerce, all the way to the Attorney General's office, looking for savings there. And then they also looked at line items that at this point in the fiscal year, you know, where they're almost done, you'd think you'd have, you know, very little money left. You've been spending it. where they had large balances or they hadn't spent much of their appropriation, and they, you know, said, well, hey, you can do with less, or we're just going to, you know, eliminate that program as well.
Remember the externship kerfuffle? The governor wanted teachers to go out into the business community and learn more about what students need to know to actually get a job. Now I see, Jim Siegel, that there's a line in the budget that would requires each school district to appoint a business advisory council that must meet at least quarterly. Is this related to that?
It is, and this is actually required. They're already required to have business advisory councils. This is almost a provision that says, no, we really mean it. You know, you really do need to have these guys, this council, meet and form up and do something. Because, yeah, there's, you know, look, the governor and the governor more than the legislature, but the governor really believes that there's a benefit to having business input into our education system. And now his teacher externship program had a whole variety of logistical problems. We don't need to go through them. But this is something that already they're supposed to have in place. But I think this is sort of telling them, yeah, you really need to start doing this and having these folks meet and make some suggestions here and there to your local school boards.
One thing that I would like to point out here is that when we looked at the story from the get-go, you found that most local school boards had business representation either on their board or in the form of support that they listen to, you know, because businesses tend to be the people, you know, they support the local schools in many ways. Mm-hmm. And so they've got the superintendent's ear. Regardless. Now, this is just a way of making a formal, you know, it's got to be there, blah, 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 for maybe, you know, a few school districts that don't have that. And this commission would have, you know, certain things it has to do. But I think a lot, you know, that it's kind of a misnomer if you think that business interests are not represented on school boards. Most school boards, they are.
Again, it looks like another way to help squeeze more money out. The budget eliminates Governor Kasich's straight A fund or straight A program, which awarded more than $300 million to local schools since 2014 for projects aimed at improving student achievement or saving money. Is that another Rotary raid, Jackie? Or
I think, didn't they just roll that money back into general education funding,
okay.
I believe.
Okay, so it stayed in education, but it wasn't working, or do we even know? There's so many. I'm getting blank looks. I'm assuming.
Well, it handed out about $300 million over a few years it's been around. So,
that's not chump change.
I've been told by some of the associations that it actually was a beneficial thing. Now, their concern about it from the beginning was always, you know, before you do things like the straight A fund, you really need to make sure you're spending enough money up front on the basic funding formula. And they don't believe that was ever done. So that was their only real complaint about it, was that they felt like they were putting new funds in place for innovation before they actually had the basic funding fixed. So now we're not, when hard budget times come up, these are the kind of things that fall off.
I was going to say, that's the kind of program that you put in place when you have a big surplus. And you're
all
like,
right.
Well, we've got this money, and let's see what people can come up with.
So is being able to work for the Department of Education for free something that pops up when times are hard? Because that's another line. It authorizes the department to use volunteers to accomplish any of its purposes. I mean, what's that about?
Well, again, I think a lot of schools do have those people who come in and help pull aside reading students that maybe need some extra attention.
But this is for the State Department of Education.
Right. I think it's just giving them the ability to do the same kind of thing, you know, get parents and people who are interested and, maybe retired teachers, people who want to help out, gives them an opportunity to do that.
Okay.
I have not talked to the Department of Education about this, but I got to assume that somebody over there said, we have this specific thing that we'd like to bring some volunteers in for, and we need the permission to do that. But it is it is an interesting idea that we're going to have, you know, the Department of Ed, which, by the way, if you go through this budget, there are so many little items in here that are requiring the Department of Education to do more tasks,
mm-hmm.
which I always find funny, because the Department of Education is like the whipping boy of the legislature, in that they really don't like the Department of Education very much in most legislative circles, because they just don't feel that they're fully competent in everything they do. But then again, they keep piling more tasks on them. So apparently they must be doing a good enough job, because they keep giving them more to do.
Maybe that's where those volunteers come in.
Speaking of giving them more to do, always giving me these great segues, but the budget earmarks $5 million for Ohio State University to establish a leadership institute aimed at helping elected officials understand how government works and teaching civility. And I know that Mark Kovac wrote about this last week and asked, I think it was House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger, you know, if this was kind of a place that lawmakers wanted to land, you know, in the future. And he was, you know, affronted and offended by the question, apparently. But what I also learned was that Ohio State didn't even ask for this. Any of you guys know what's going on there?
It's
$5 million.
No, they have asked for this. They've been planning this for a couple years, I guess. And you know, there are similar programs at a couple of other universities across the country. I believe Virginia has one. And what, you know, at those programs, they have large staffs of like 100 plus people, and they do all sorts of things from, you know, hosting, from training state legislators to doing trainings in local communities with boards of trustees, to doing economic research for cities and smaller municipalities that may not be able to, you know, afford a big research firm to come in. I mean, this, you know, I was at the announcement last week, and the details on this are pretty vague at this point. They're going to spend the next year or so OSU, the Glenn School, the Glenn College.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's going to be housed. And according to the dean of the Glenn College and University President Michael Drake, this was something that John Glenn himself was very personally interested in and supportive of, you know, before his death late last year. And, you know, part of this stems from the fact that now that we have term limits at the state level, you know, people cycle in and out, and especially in the House. And, you know, the budget is a great example of this, because it's a huge, as we've been talking about for, you know, however long we've been in here, a huge policy document in addition to all of these, you know, numbers that you have to crunch. And so when you have, you know, you have freshmen on your committee that deals with the budget, and most of them, when I talk to them, they have no idea what they're getting into. And then at the end, you know, they feel like they know a little bit more. And then the next time around, they feel like a little bit more. But they're only, if they're in the chamber, the max length that they have, they only have 4 budget cycles to do that. And by the time that they've become kind of adept at maneuvering that and have those skills, then they're term limited out.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, too. I mean, you know, these people who want to be a lawmaker, who want to run for an office, they don't understand how you do that. They don't understand the rules. They don't understand how you do, you know, keep fundraising and keep track of that and run campaigns. And so, you know, I guess this group is going to be able to be helped by the Glenn School, because they'll have special workshops and communities to try to bring those folks in and tell them, okay, you want to run for this office. Well, here's what you need to do.
But it is getting a jump start with $5 million in state funding, which, you know, I talked to some good government folks that lean to the left and to the right and say, you know, this may be a really great idea, but, you know, should state dollars really be footing the bill? This sounds like something that is best left to, you know, private fundraising and from, you know, other civic organizations and corporate sponsors.
Here's a nutball. Yeah. Did you want to say something, Jim?
I was just going to say, I've heard more concerns about the timing of this than the actual idea. The
sure.
fact that this is being brought out at a time when our budget revenues are tanking, that, you know, is this really the best place to spend $5 million? I have heard folks say this is probably a good idea with term limits, like it's been said already. I mean, you know, understanding what it means to, you know, what the state bonding authority means, how the Bureau of Workers' Compensation works, what is Medicaid.
How
really
long
do?
Has term limits been in effect in Ohio?
Since 2000.
Right, yeah. That's how long I've been telling them. There's no way anyone can learn what they have to learn. There's no elder states people in the Ohio General Assembly anymore. There are a few because they go back and forth.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, when you think, but it's much fewer than there were before and much newer faces. And even just, I think, in the last 4 years, you've seen people who come in and do a really short stint, like one term or half of a term. Mm-hmm. And that's not really, you know, great
but
for anybody.
But back when term limits passed, that was supposedly what people wanted. That's what the voters wanted. They didn't want people who, you know, they wanted neophytes coming in and taking a fresh look at everything. But,
yeah, but
it's,
you know,
complicated.
What's happened in reality is these experienced lawmakers go on to have lobbying firms, consulting firms, advising firms, you know, and they're in the state legislature. They're lobbying them all the time for something. And that's probably why we see some of these things that we kind of, you know, look at and think, I wonder where that came from. Well, probably came from, you know, if you walk it back, it probably came from a lawmaker who knew what was going on, knew where that fund was, knew how they could get in there and maneuver it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the reality is term limits, they have some, these are the consequences of them.
Yeah. The issue of being able to transfer college credits in the state of Ohio, it's this way around all over the country. It's been an issue. This line item prohibits universities from refusing to accept college credit earned in Ohio in the past 5 years as a substitute for comparable coursework. That's a really big deal to a lot of students who couldn't afford to go to Ohio State and to get their credits transferred without having to pay. It also requires a state explore a plan to allow credits to transfer from a for-profit school to a state institution. Again, keywords being explore a plan. That's not happening yet, but there must have been a big push for that, Jim Siegel, because that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, this has been an issue that's been worked on for probably 15 years around the state house. There's just been, you know, as more and more people. More and more students are trying to go start their higher education careers at 2-year schools and community colleges. There's been more and more of a push to get those credits to transfer when you decide, okay, now I want to go to Ohio State, now I want to go to Bowling Green or wherever. And so this is just kind of a continuation of that. I think there's been a lot of work done on this over the years, and I think they're really just they're just trying to solidify it more and make it so that the transition is as smooth as possible. I'm hoping that people will follow up on this soon to try to find out exactly what how this works,
right,
and whether it is still doing what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that when we do follow up, when we need to look at is whether the students who transfer those credits, whether they do as well in the end, because I know that I have heard from university folks who say sometimes students come in and they have a class at a community college and they transfer that in somehow at either full or partial credit. But then they really haven't learned some of the things that they taught in those classes at the four-year
university. And I've heard
those
stories, and I've heard stories as well that students who go to a community college actually get a better education because there's 75 kids in the class versus 300.
That's it.
And it's a higher quality.
Right. It goes both ways.
Yes, cuts both
so
ways.
So I think it, you know, that's something to look at in the future. We're just starting to see some numbers of this, really, and good numbers to look at it, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Obviously, I've not hit upon a lot of things. There's a million things. I highly recommend people get a hold of their Columbus Dispatch and check out this article. The title is From Schools to Ice Cream, How Ohio's New Budget Affects You. There's a plethora of issues that Jim Siegel has covered in this project. Did you have fun this year, Jim?
Oh, always have fun. Nothing more fun than the state budget, let me tell you.
He's going to go have himself an ice cream. Right
now you go stick needles in your eye. Okay. Jim Siegel, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure.
Jim Siegel, Columbus Dispatch State House reporter Jackie Borchardt. Same to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's Jackie Borchardt, State House reporter for Cleveland.com, and Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks to you as well.
Always good to be here.
Thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.